Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
You've been doing documentaries about China and Hong Kong since the 80s. I can assume now that you've witnessed a lot of change. Can you tell us a little bit about how much has China changed since first visited?
Oh, well, I think first visited in 84. That's when the changes from 78 and the overthrow of the idea of getting rich was glorious with Deng Xiaoping declaring that China was going on the capitalist road under state control changed everything. So the changes are in every way, but certainly the cities, of course, I think probably most people have got some idea about the eastern cities, the big cities of Beijing and Shanghai and all of the huge change and modernization of those cities, but as well the overwhelming growth of the middle class, well, since Mao's time, certainly since the early 70s, has made a huge difference to everything there and in Europe as well. I mean, now that the middle class has got money, they travel everywhere and everyone's got an opinion on them.
So then the title, the China's Three Dreams. Now, the communist leader Xi Jinping in particular seems to be eager to promote what's known as a China dream. Can you tell us a little bit about this narrative?
Well, not in my film. China's Three Dreams came about because the main subject, Zhang Lei, in the film, she says that China's Three Dreams in the 70s were a radio, a watch, and a bicycle. And that's everybody's three dreams. And, of course, I said, well, what are the new three dreams? And that's what this film's about. So the way she put the three dreams now, she said dream number one was Deng Xiaoping's dream to make everybody rich through capitalism under state control. And that produced the second dream, which was perennial dream of having a better life. And it sort of exaggerated the need for the better life, and it just changed the idea of what the better life was made of. And then the third dream, the most difficult and the almost impossible dream to achieve, and that is the dream of a meaningful existence. So they are the China's three dreams that the films are about.
So in this dream, there's a dream of prosperity. Would it be correct to say that that in pursuit of greater economic freedom, so that has been done at the expense of certain other opportunities and openness, that China's been willing to allow a sort of economic openness, but at the same time, been used very much to assuage the middle class from arguing for sort of greater civic...
Times have changed over the period of the last 30-odd years. It's really sort of basically, depending on the leadership of China, how the interpretation of the need for change and the ways that the change will be applied occurred. But certainly the current era under Xi Jinping has seen, I think it's fair to say, a huge change in the sense of tightening up security in the country, trying to be more and more definite on the road to a competitive future, a future which is China sees itself as a country that has been put down and damaged and held in control by the West for so long. And from the days when in 1842 the British took Hong Kong from them and made it part of the drug wars. And in every way, China feels and the Chinese people feel that they have been treated badly by the West, and that they are the middle kingdom, that they are the most successful. And in that way, the current leadership, it seems to me, is putting together an idea of redemption for China in a much stronger way than his predecessors. And in that way, I think we all notice the differences where there is, again, a lot of cracking down on journalism and the cracking down on people who are complaining about various things in China. It's been a much, much stronger view taken by Xi Jinping and the current leadership, and also, of course, the way he suddenly became more powerful than any of the other leaders since Mao Zedong, which he decided that he was going to be a leader for life. So it's quite a change at the moment from even his predecessors, who were like Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao. They were, I'd say, Wen Jiabao particularly was much more on the road towards a freer and a more open society, not completely, but much more so than Xi Jinping is. So those different leaders make the decisions about how the country is going to change.
So how difficult is it at the moment to film in China with the amount of government monitoring? Was it a challenge to actually get people to open up to you about?
Well, that's a really critical question, actually, Stephen. I mean, the question in China, when I first started filming there in the early 80s, Sometimes I'd be pulled in by the People's Liberation Army and they would ask me to expose the film or erase the tape if it was a video because of filming in sensitive areas. Quite quickly, you get used to what is a sensitive area, and I had no trouble whatsoever since those early days because I didn't actually publicise anything about what I was doing, nor did I ask for permission from the government to shoot anything because I basically wasn't covering the sorts of areas that were sensitive in that way. So talking to people at the grassroots level in any place in China is okay when you're filming alone like I was with a small plastic camera, it's actually not so difficult, whereas a full film crew and interviewing politicians and so on draws huge attention to yourself. So it was keeping a low profile as well as keeping the budget down. I worked alone in China over 30 years and it became quite normal for me to sort of see when I have to hurry and what not to shoot.
It's basically not about announcing yourself too much and knowing that to avoid, say, sort of sensitive areas like, say, Xinjiang or something at the moment, because that would just draw so much attention. Would that be correct?
Yes, if you're filming any sort of protests, any sort of demonstrations, even public fights in the street that have nothing to do with politics, if you go there, you'll immediately be challenged. Well, if you get picked a couple of times, your name will go on a list, and the list means that you won't get a visa. It's quite important that you keep a low profile. And I wasn't doing current affairs, so I wasn't actually in Xinjiang filming Muslim minorities. I wasn't focusing on the things that news gatherers often do, which get them into trouble. I was doing much more deeply enmeshed stories with the people, and I would be with them, even if it was with, well, previous films when I've been working with securities and investment corporations, and I would still actually go in with the subjects and film with the subjects, and that seemed to carry some sort of imprimatur of permission. I didn't actually have to ask permission except from the people I was filming.
And finally, the China narrative now, obviously as much as China is certainly walking out of the humiliating decade that they like to refer to and very much sees itself as a great power, there still is a lot of a reticence talking about the history, about talking about some of the most traumatic events that have happened in the last century, things like the Cultural Revolution and the July 4 protests. How do these narratives, are they still broached in China? How does a reform movement still communicate with itself within the nation when there's such sort of strict controls?
Yeah, it's absolutely true, and China's Three Dreams deals with that a lot. That's quite a huge subject in China's Three Dreams, because the main subject, Zhang Lei, she actually wanted to find out why she felt different from her contemporaries. She felt she was very different, that she wasn't after money and she wasn't after status and she wasn't after all the things that her younger contemporaries seemed to be interested in. And she wondered why she was different. She also wondered why she was sort of generally unhappy, and she felt that love had been devalued with the current developments on the internet and everything else. But essentially, that question of what went on that the government doesn't want you to know was a very, very big thing. She discovered that it wasn't just her story or her inability to be happy because of the way she was treated by her parents in the Cultural Revolution. It was more or less the whole nation's story. So many people have a hugely traumatic background because of Mao's Cultural Revolution. And in that way, she was telling a story for the whole of her generation. And they are things they have been discussed, but they are not encouraged to be discussed. And the same with, of course, the Tiananmen Square incidents or massacre. It was basically totally more or less dealt with by, there have been some mistakes in the past, but we've admitted them and rectified them. And so there was nothing much examination of that. And that's what this film reveals quite a lot. So, I mean, it's a very good question because, you know, it's a long time ago now for young people and they're not really interested. They think it's great that they've got the internet and they think that their grandparents had terrible, terrible lives, but that they don't want to keep on hearing about the terrible lives. They want to be learning all these things that they can learn through the internet. And a lot of things that are on the internet, it's more open than it used to be, the society, but the internet is still under strict control. And that's covered also in this film, China's Three Dreams.